Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A man, no range. On the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A man, no range.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert. And this week, joined by Fed Pill Joe, Cousin Joe, Fed Fan Joe. JD is on assignment. He's actually on his way to Las Vegas. I want to say he's actually like WWE's pulling out of Vegas, and I think JD's on his way there because he's going to go wrestle in a tournament.
He's very sad that he's just missing WWE.
Just missed him
by that much.
Yeah, you know, he had no plans to watch it, but he did. Deep down, he was interested because he was asking my group chat, like, hey, how was this? Hey, how was that?
Yeah.
So he wasn't completely disinterested, but he did not watch it.
The morbid curiosity of when a car crash happens and you just have to watch it. I feel like that's how JD views WWE. He doesn't enjoy it. It hurts him, but he still wants to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's still like they're like the number one, you know, show in town.
Yeah.
In his biggest hobby. He's not a fan of it. He thinks they're gross, which he's right. Like the people running it seem to be evil.
Yeah.
You know, we lost one evil guy in Vince, and I think we gained a bunch of other evil people. They're just evil in different ways.
Yeah.
I think the best joke I saw over the weekend was when Bianca Belair was in the middle of the ring and she exposed her belly, and someone was like, "I have
credit one,
a Pampers or a Similac logo."
I seen the one with credit one on her stomach, and I thought that was the best.
Yeah, that's awesome. So WrestleMania weekend was in the books. It was a tale of two shows. Like night one, they took off. They decided, you know what, we're not going to do anything cool or special. Yeah. We're going to have one good match and basically fuck it up.
Yeah.
And then the main event, which should have been a really good match, actually at times was a really good match. We're going to convolute the hell out of that and make it terrible.
Yes.
So let's go ahead and start with WrestleMania weekend, night one. Joe, what was your overall thoughts? What did you like? And then what did you not like? Because I got to be honest with the audience. Two nights is too much for me. I complain about the length of AEW shows. They go 5 hours on like a Sunday. I think that's an atrocity for WWE to do 8 hours over a weekend. I can't do it. So I have to kind of pick and choose. I got other responsibilities. So night one, the only thing that I saw was the main event. Really, I was interested in Seth Rollins and Gunther, and I was going to go back and watch it, but then I heard about the finish. I was like, okay, why bother?
Yeah.
And then night two, I was interested in three matches, and all three matches delivered. So tell me about night one. How was that?
So night one, they had the six-man tag match to open WrestleMania. That was LA Knight and the Usos. Even though for months, Jey Uso and LA Knight hated each other, they were about ready to come to blows. And then all of a sudden, they are just really good friends with no tension whatsoever, teaming against The Vision and Ishow Speed. And it was done purely for one reason. Ishow Speed did the big spot off of the ropes onto the table after the match, and they just wanted the YouTube clip. They wanted the Instagram clip. And on Instagram, I think it had close to 30 million views overnight. So like they got what they wanted out of it, but that was the only reason that match was done. They did the women's four-team, eight-woman tag match for the tag team titles. Nikki could not compete. She fractured her ankle, sprained her foot, and tore a ligament in her ankle all at once and had surgery 2 weeks ago. I know exactly how that feels because I did the exact same thing when I was 13, and my doctor laughed at me when he brought in the x-ray. So he brought it in and laughed and said, "You are going to have to explain to me how you did this because I've never seen it before." And it wasn't that funny of a story. I was playing football on the street. Like,
I was like, I remember you having to have, you had surgery on that, right?
No. So I just did rehab on that. The only surgery I had was hernia surgery, which I, you know, when Bron Breakker was announced as being out, I was in his timeline matched up to exactly what I said it would, because I had the exact same surgery. So Nikki couldn't make it. They did the spot calling out Paige, now back with WWE, multi-year deal. And she looked okay. And they didn't have her do, I mean, 8 women in a match, and I think it was 10 minutes long. And Paige,
so AEW legend, Saraya.
AEW Saraya.
Right. Legendary former women's champion of AEW.
Yes.
Is now back. She was also a former, she was the NXT champion. Did she ever hold the main title?
Yes. Her very first night on Raw, because The Rock had decided to make a movie about her and they needed an ending for the movie. So they had her win the title. So when they started filming the movie, that could be the finish to the movie.
That makes sense.
That is, yeah. Now, here's a fun fact about that match, the WrestleMania match, because Paige debuted, I believe it was the night after WrestleMania 31.
Yeah.
And I believe she was still the youngest woman in the match on Saturday.
She started in WWE when she was like 19.
Yeah, she is 33 years old still. She has been around wrestling forever. I think she went on her first tour of Japan when she was 14 or 15.
Yeah.
Got signed by WWE when she was like 18. I think made her main roster debut at 20 or 21.
Yeah.
And had taken a couple years off already. Like, she has had such a wild career already at this point in her life and still only being 33 years old.
Yeah. So if, you know, when she was in AEW, it was like a fish out of water. I thought she just didn't, I just didn't really think that she fit in there, because when she was in her, at her peak, now keep in mind, she's still really young.
Yeah.
But when she was at her peak in WWE, she was really good when maybe 3 other people in the company were actually like really good.
Right.
Like she was the precursor to the Four Horsewomen coming in. Like, she was like right before they came in, and then they came in and they blew her away. And then of course she got injured, and then she had all those drug problems, whatever she was going through.
Yeah.
Alberto problems.
Yeah.
And so then she kind of flamed out. So when she got to AEW, people were like, "Oh, she was a really good wrestler." It was like, well, she was for her time, but she hasn't evolved quite yet. But yeah. I think what she's able to do, she might do okay in like modern day Fed. You think she would do fine? Or because they have really good wrestlers there too.
Yeah, if she is healthy enough, I think she can be fine with the wrestlers that WWE has right now. But it just all depends on her health and what she can and cannot do. They did not let her take really any bumps on Saturday. And I don't know if that was this is a short notice thing and we're not going to risk something looking bad, or if it's, this is just where we feel with your health, what you can do. Yeah. But they did not have her do very much. She looked good doing offense. I think anybody with any sort of athletic background who's willing to do the work can make offense look good. That's not the hard part of wrestling, in my opinion. I think the selling and the being safe is the hard part of wrestling, but they really just had her do offense stuff, and she was doing it with Charlotte and Alexa and Bailey and Lyra, who are all very good. And, you know, they were able to make things look good.
Yeah.
So long term, especially with her being in a tag team, I think where she's not going to have to do 15, 20 minute singles matches, I think she can be fine. It's just all dependent on her health.
Yeah. And her tag team partner is one of the Bellas, right?
Yes.
So she's the best wrestler in that tag team. So that's good.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it's not even Nikki, who was like, got kind of good at one point. It's Brie, who they did not let come back because she was doing the most basic of move and damn near killed Liv Morgan. Yeah. And they're just like, not having it.
Yeah. Okay. So they won the tag titles. What happened? What happened next? What else we got on this night one?
Man, honestly, I can't even remember all of night one. The only other thing that stands out to me that I would remember outside of the main event is the Seth and Gunther match.
Yeah.
And that match absolutely fucking slapped.
That's what I heard.
They did leave some meat on the bone. You know, they went about 15 minutes and then, you know, Bron Breakker had the run in. So like that kind of sours it a bit, but they just, the funniest thing from that match is learning Gunther cannot take a pedigree.
That's funny.
Seth did the pedigree twice and somehow both times, I swear to God, I think Gunther landed on his back. You could see him turn because he did not want to take it on his stomach.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was another one, you know, it's WWE is not the only company doing this, but I think because they do it a lot, the other companies follow is they'll have these really good matches with bad finishes.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's not that you can't have run-ins and you can't have interferences and you can't have heels like you're cheating to win. It's just so much of it and it's happening on every show that it just gets old. So when you're sitting down to watch a WrestleMania, you just kind of want to not have that stuff. I felt the same way about Rebellion. I felt the same way about a lot of AEW shows.
Yeah.
It's just way too much of it's happening. And if you're going to do it in the shitty matches that no one cares about. When you got two top guys, and I know they want to go back to it and eventually, but you can get there without having Braun run in and ruining the finish. You can have like a regular finish and then do the Braun run in afterwards.
Yeah, I think their line of thinking on this one is, and Meltzer's the one who said the plan is to get to Gunther versus Roman at some point. He's not sure if it's SummerSlam. So you got to keep Gunther strong. And does it make sense to beat Seth clean before starting the Braun Breakker feud? My line of thinking is if you can't beat either of them, don't put them against each other.
Like, well, and Seth, you could beat.
Yeah.
Seth's beatable. He's untouchable. The thing about Gunther, you can't beat him because his gimmick is you can't beat him. Right.
Yeah. He's been beaten by so few guys in WWE. Yeah. I get that. I've got the card pulled up now. I completely forgot about it, but it was a really fun match. Jacob Fatu versus Drew McIntyre.
Okay.
They did the no holds barred match. Really good. They put over Fatu clean in it. I think that guy really needs a push towards the main event scene this year. Sure. And I think they recognize that and they're going to start leaning that way because they put him over Drew clean. I mean, clean in a hardcore match.
And Drew, at the risk of getting yelled at by Nick LaPiccolo, I think Drew is filming Highlander, right? Like at some point.
He's been filming Highlander for like the last month and a half.
Okay. So he has not taken any time off.
No. So he specifically said that they were able to set up the filming schedule in a way that allowed him to not miss any time. So he's already been pictured on set with Henry Cavill, and he does fly back and forth as needed. I would anticipate may miss a SmackDown this week, but I also would not be surprised if he just doesn't miss time because I think it's important to him to not miss time for Hollywood because wrestling is his, that's what he wants to do. And Hollywood is just something he was offered because Dave Bautista recommended him for a role and then more roles have came his way.
Well, that's good. And Nick's a good agent. Nick is getting him a lot of roles. So that's probably helpful to him. So we have Fatu beating Drew in a good match. You had Gunther and Seth Rollins. That was a really good match with a you know, kind of a wonky finish. But then you get to the there was a women's title match.
Yeah,
you had Rhea Ripley versus Jade Cargill. Right?
That was night two.
That was night two. Okay.
So night one we had Becky versus AJ.
Okay, how was that?
It was solid, nothing spectacular. They've been kind of teasing this weird thing with Lady Ref Jess in WWE and Becky kind of butting heads in that Becky thinks Jess is costing her matches on purpose, and they keep having her referee Becky Lynch matches. Okay. And then the finish was basically AJ was getting ready to go splash Becky in the corner, and Becky pulled Jess in front of her, and then that allowed her to get AJ for the finish. So they're teasing, like, I don't know if that's going to lead to Lady Ref Jess wrestling Becky. She did wrestle on the indies. She's wrestled in Evolve Under a Mask for WWE. So I don't know what the plan is there, but it's been something they've been teasing for months. Okay. So it was kind of short. Liv versus Stephanie Vaquer was a 6.5 minute match.
So they didn't give the women any time at all.
Yeah. Well, and Body Slam reported for Liv and Vaquer specifically that they are beat up and they just did not want them to get any further hurt.
I like some of those guys at Body Slam. That sounds like cope to me. Not from Body Slam. It sounds like somebody from WWE leaked some cope. That way they don't get yelled at for not giving the women time.
For that match, I would believe it because it's, I mean, obviously we've seen what happened to Liv. I mean, She was rocking a goose egg and two black eyes. But Vaquer has been dealing with an ankle injury that has been talked about for at least a month and a half now. So I would kind of believe that. Honestly, watching the show live, I thought it was fine. Nothing spectacular, but it was fine. But nothing, if you would have taken any match that happened pre-main event and put it on Raw, nothing would have felt out of place either.
Well, and I thought, think that was the big criticism, is that it just felt like a Raw. Or I think somebody in our chat said it felt like a Saturday night's main event.
Yeah, even some of the Saturday night's main event matches, it surpassed a lot of what we had seen on WrestleMania Night 1.
Yeah.
And then we get to the main event.
I'll run down the main event because I actually did watch this. Because I'll be honest, I was really interested in Cody versus Randy Orton. They are two WWE mainstays. I know Randy Orton's not everybody's cup of tea. He's my cup of tea. I've always liked the guy. He bores me at times, but then at times, like every once in a while, he just pulls a great match out of his ass. And I was like, you know, he's in there with Cody, and Cody is great. Cody is capable of the five boys. He's had several of them, even in the WWE. And it's Cody and Randy. These guys got a lot of sway. I got, for whatever reason, even with the Pat McAfee stuff, I was like, I bet they have a good match and they don't have a ton of gaga.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought that. And then they start the match, and then immediately Cody and Jelly Roll of all fucking people take out Pat McAfee. And I was like, you know what? That's brilliant. They incorporated Pat. They got him to do the heel stuff at the beginning. They kicked his ass, put him through a table. And now he's eliminated from the match. I was like, that's good. And now Randy and Cody can just have their match. I was like, that is a way to incorporate Pat without ruining the match. Right. So in my head, like, I was like, this is brilliant. Now these guys are going to have a great match. And then they proceed to, for like the next 10 to 15 minutes, have a slow plotting match where you start to see Cody turning heel. And it was boring, I would say, for the live audience. But I was like, I understood what they were trying to do. You had Cody turning heel. He's doing all these heel tactics. He does, I think at one point he did a low blow, right? And he's hitting Randy with the belt. Randy's bleeding, Cody's bleeding, the double juice, and then all of a sudden, like, the match starts getting good, and Randy's this over babyface, and Cody's this heel, and now we got two guys, main eventers, double juice, and the match just starts getting heated up, and then they do the fucking ref bump, and we're like, God damn it. Now we know that Pat's gonna come down, and then it gets goofy as shit because Pat's wearing a referee's shirt.
Yeah.
And he,
which none of the fans in attendance realized it was Pat because of the shirt. They cheered the ref running down the count for Randy. They did not realize it was Pat.
Yeah. Pat, who is wearing a neck brace in a full sprint.
Yeah.
Just wearing a referee shirt. Just like, just misplaced. Like, this should have been the ISHO speed match, right? Like, you want to do the gaga and the horse shit? Just do that in the beginning. Don't mess up the main event. When you get two serious wrestlers in the main event, like two really good pro wrestlers, right?
Yeah.
And so Pat comes down and he's getting ready to count the 1, 2, 3. Cody kicks out. Randy Orton turns on Pat, hits him with the RKO, and then Cody gets the victory. I cannot remember exactly. He just hit the crossroads, didn't he? He got the pin.
Yeah.
Yeah. He gets him with the, he's distracted. He gets the crossroads, gets the victory. And then after the match, Randy Orton turns on Cody again. So Randy punts and him. Cody, yeah, punts him.
Which
so
he hasn't used in what, 12, 13 years?
Yeah, well, because the concussion snitches kind of got that banned. So here's the thing. Cody's a babyface to begin the match. Randy Orton's a heel. During the match, they flip-flop. Cody turns heel. Randy Orton turns babyface. By the end of the match, they had flip-flopped again. Cody's back babyface. Randy Orton's back heel. It's unnecessary horseshit. It's dumb.
So what this match reminded me of, did you ever watch the Will Smith movie, I think Hancock, where he's the drunk superhero who hates everybody?
No.
Okay. So this movie came out, I want to say in like 2008, 2009-ish maybe. Will Smith is...
Hold on. Breaking news. Joe Hendry in concert next Monday on Raw. There you go. Okay, go ahead.
So Will Smith is the super, he is basically a Superman, but he is a super depressed version of Superman because he has all this power and he's just depressed, hates everything, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. And he's trying to become a good guy, trying to get people to like him. So the story behind the movie is what reminded me of this main event, because that movie was supposed to just be Will Smith as the superhero who eventually becomes the good guy and then fights the evil in the end. But the studio decided to take the movie over and combined two scripts to make it into a love story. So the entire mood of the movie changes in the middle, where Will Smith finds another superhero who is of his same species. But if they are too close to each other, like physically close to each other, they lose their superhero powers. And so like they have to stay away from each other and never be around each other, or else they cannot be superheroes anymore. And it was all because the studio wanted to implement a love story into this superhero movie. They just combined two unrelated scripts together. That's what the Cody Rhodes Randy Orton match seemed like to me, where they had two different ideas. They didn't know which one would work best, so they just threw them together and said, let's see what happens. It was kind of the same thought I had with John Cena last year, where if it was a mistake to put them together in the first place, because the fans are not going to boo Randy Orton. And in turn, because Randy Orton is the more beloved, he's the elder, he's, you know, the legend at this point, you know, in his mid to late 40s. If you were going to do the heel turn, do it during WrestleMania to actually get genuine shock factor. Because if it fails, then you just have everybody shitting on your champion leading up to it. And then Pat gets introduced to try to get Orton more of a heel, and everything just looks like shit. You take two stories and just smash them together, and nobody knows what's going on.
So the Orton and Rhodes feud was perfect until Pat got involved.
Yes.
Because I didn't care that people were cheering Orton and booing Cody. That didn't matter. It was still interesting.
They didn't start booing Cody until Pat got involved, though. Well, they wanted to cheer both.
Yeah, but the thing is, they were upset that Orton was getting cheered so much, that Orton wasn't really a heel, and it's like, who cares?
Yeah.
Like Orton's never going to get booed.
Yeah, like, and you know where that wasn't an issue? Where that wasn't an issue was on the fucking main event of night two, where both guys got cheered. And it was amazing. Where it wasn't an issue was the main event of SummerSlam last year, where Cody and John Cena were both faces and got cheered. The fucking Usos are in Raiders jerseys. I want to smack those sons of bitches.
They're lifelong 49ers fans.
What I know, but they're wearing black and silver. Fuck them.
Well, it looks like they have 42. Ronnie Lott did play for the Raiders. So maybe that's what they're doing. But okay. All right, now let's. So anyway, night one sucked.
Yes. So
let's get to night two. Night two kicks off Brock Lesnar versus Obafemi, and was probably going to go down as one of the great WrestleMania matches ever. It was like 5 minutes of pure insanity.
4 minutes and 45 seconds, and I don't think Brock Lesnar's heart could last any longer.
That's all we needed. It was perfect. It was perfect. Like they hit some big moves. They did some selling. They did some no selling. They did some more big moves, and Obafemi got the victory clean as a sheet. And that's how You put a motherfucker over. It was perfect.
It is.
If they would have went 10 minutes, it would have sucked.
Yeah. I think Brock would have died.
Yeah.
I think Brock would have died if they would have. That guy was so fucking beat red and sweaty after a 4.5 minute match. I think his heart would have exploded if they would have went any longer.
Yeah. So he puts over Oba Femi clean. Oba leaves. Brock's laying in the ring. He starts crying. Takes off the gloves, takes off his shoes, his boots, off his little calves, and starts crying, gives Paul Heyman a big hug and says, that's it. He's retired. So Brock Lesnar, who is named in the Janelle Grant lawsuit as being a someone that might have taken, you know, tried to be a part of that whole thing. Like it was offered and he accepted, but it just never went down, I guess.
Yeah.
So he's probably not like liable for anything other than just being gross.
Yeah.
But they're selling Thank You Brock shirts, which is pretty fucking out of touch if you ask me. Yeah. But it looks like he's retired, man, after being with the WWE since since 2000. So
he off and on. He made his actually, funnily enough, I'm not sure if you remember or not, but my first house show,
Mr. Perfect,
at 2001. Yep. And I did not realize because my 9-year-old brain was just so enamored with Mr. Perfect at the time.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar hadn't made a TV yet. I only remembered Mr. Perfect.
Well, so the thing is that like I've known a lot of 9-year-olds, but you were by far the dumbest 9-year-old I've ever met.
I did already have like my first concussion by that point. Actually, yeah. I had two concussions by that point.
Yeah.
Brock hadn't made it to TV yet. And like I just knew like this guy that you like I used to always get my wrestling tapes from you. So
yeah,
like you would always send me like here, go watch this, go educate yourself. Mr. Perfect was a guy I became enamored with when I was young. And I thought it was really fucking cool. I was getting to see him live. It wasn't until I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, I was looking up the card that we went to and I realized, oh shit, that was Brock that he was wrestling against.
Yeah.
That night.
And I remember being excited to see Brock because I'd heard about him.
Yeah,
in the dirt sheets. But I was more excited to see Mr. Perfect. Although we got a super chat. Glassdoor Gamer drops a five boy Canadian. Says Triple H long term booked married his way to eventually take over the WWE just to end up being an employee that will get let go.
Oh,
Road Dogg admitted he is nothing. So we're gonna save that conversation to the. Well, no, let's just go ahead and get into that. So, well, we'll go ahead and bounce around a little bit. So Triple H, he kind of is taking credit for the good stuff, but when it's bad, it's all TKO. Triple H is just an employee. He's just another guy on the show.
Yeah.
He seemed to be kind of like in the shadows, not as much as he usually is out front. He hasn't been out front as much, but what do you make of this whole thing? Is he on the hot seat? What's going on with Triple H?
I think he is exactly like Dana White in that they want him to be the face of the public side of the company and they are fine with him getting credit when things are bad and they're fine with the company taking heat when things are good and fine with the company taking heat when things are bad because at the end of the day, they're going to make the same amount of money either way. I said, though, it's funny because the same thing happened when Vince started to come back after the sale was announced that Triple H has the best job because whenever something goes bad, the general public was just blaming Vince. Like, oh, Vince got involved here. Like you could tell that's such a Vince move. And then something good would happen. Oh, that's such like that was a Triple H call there. And the same thing's happening with TKO. And to the point where Bleacher Report in their night two, or maybe it was Yahoo, one of the two in their night two review said night one felt like a TKO show and night two was Triple H correcting. Like they made a clear distinction between the two. There is a lot of things that Triple H won't have control over. He doesn't have control over how much ads get run. That's just not his call.
That's ESPN and TKO.
ESPN and TKO. Like he doesn't have control. He doesn't have control over the sponsorships on the mats. He doesn't have control over Def Rebel being involved. He doesn't make those calls. But it's fair to criticize him for the things that he can fix. Does everybody need a 5-minute entrance at WrestleMania? No. That's a thing that Triple H can fix.
Well, you can see he was the king of the 5-minute entrance, so he's trying to get it to everybody else.
And I'm fine with certain, like Roman and Punk's in the main event was cool. Like those guys having, but that's the main event. But not everybody needs that, you know. Make your main event feel special and let your other matches, your other workers down the card, let the match speak for the work. Not everybody needs a Hollywood over the top 4 to 6 minute entrance, because then you're just taking an extra 10 minutes that can go to the match of people getting over and just, you know, making it a YouTube clip, an Instagram clip, which they have said they're not a wrestling company. They're a content creating company. And those are the clips that'll get the views.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's fair to criticize Triple H for things like that. And for booking decision, like you could have came up, you had plenty of time to come up with a better story for Cody versus Randy, whether or not Pat was inserted without Triple H wanting him to be or not. He still had plenty of time, because those phone calls that were supposed to be with Pat started a month ago.
Right. Well, it was supposed to be a mentor that was like, Pat's not a mentor to Randy.
Right.
That's not how that works.
You have plenty of time to come up with a better story, and that's still what he came up with. You have plenty of time to come up with a better match layout, and that's what he came up with. They did not touch on the 20-year history of Cody and Randy until the Friday before WrestleMania, until the night before their match was any of that history touched on TV.
Did you see? So we got a comment here. This is a good one. Did you see Ted DiBiase Jr. tweet that he was at this year's WrestleMania? Yes. I sure did. He had really good seats. I wonder how he was able to pay for those.
Yeah.
I wonder if Mississippi held up with that.
Yeah, I do think that he made some money out of the state of Mississippi where he was. I don't know if he was an employee or where, but like the state of Mississippi paid him money. Yeah. And he was the only one who did not get a guilty charge from that. So, you know,
good. Yeah, always fight, I guess.
Always fight, because everybody else pled out. And he's like, no, fuck that. Brett Favre didn't get charged. Like, let's see what happens. Yeah. The state of Mississippi does not like to convict white men of financial crimes, because then if you convict one, you have to go after all the others.
Yeah. So
they weren't about to do that.
Yeah. All right. So Brock retires. Let's go ahead and get to the next match, which both nights, I'm trying to figure out if the main event of night two is my favorite, if it was Obafemi and Brock Lesnar, or if it was the Intercontinental Championship ladder match, Penta defeating who was all in that match? Do you have the list?
Yeah, we had Rey Mysterio, Dragon Lee, JD McDonagh, Rusev, and Javon Evans. And Javon Evans stole the fucking show.
He did. It was a great match. I thought he was probably the most spectacular. But if I had a critique of Javon, that ladder spot with him and Rusev, very clearly is Rusev jumping off that ladder and diving into his diamond cutter.
You are correct, but that is Rusev's fault. He tried to fix the positioning of the ladder and then gave up. Yeah. And
but
just started
I've seen that in Javon Evans matches before, though.
Yeah, like, clearly has to like position himself. But like Javon's coming in from the floor, climbing on top of the rope. Rusev has got to get the ladder in the right spot.
Yeah.
But either way, it looks spectacular.
Yeah. I mean, the match was fantastic. The most spectacular was Javon. The biggest star in the match by far was Penta, I thought. The guy was so over, so cool. He is at his peak right now. He is like Lucha Underground level Penta.
Yeah.
Just like one of the biggest stars in the whole company. The guy looks fantastic. Ray still doing it, man. He's still out there doing it.
51 years old, man.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, they did a Finn Balor versus an imposter JD McDonagh tonight. And I say imposter because it's clearly a stand-in, because they killed JD McDonagh. at WrestleMania with that Mexican Destroyer on the ladder. And they JD, that was an awesome spot.
Yeah, and JD was not selling it one bit tonight. Like, his match with the
no. Well, no, because it was a different person tonight. They found a stand-in JD McDonough because they killed the original JD McDonough last night.
They found another rapey Irishman that looks like Finn Balor to do that gimmick, huh?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think those guys are just hanging out in bars in Ireland. They just kind of give them their haircut and, you know, make them cut a bunch of weight to have abs.
Yeah. Pentagon Jr. won that match. So the first hour of ESPN, the WrestleMania on ESPN, that was one of the better 1 hour wrestling shows I've ever seen.
it was
really good. Like, you had the big match with Oba and Brock, and then the great finish. And then you had like a car crash with the IC title match.
Yeah. They put the right two matches on ESPN1. And I think that was a lead in to a hockey game. If I remember correct, I think they had hockey come on right after it. Okay. So I think they did the right match. And that's why they moved it up an hour they wanted a lead into something. They definitely did the right matches on ESPN1 there.
Okay, so I didn't watch the rest of the show until we got to the main event. So I'm just going to quick hit. Street fight. The demon, Finn Balor, defeated Dominic Mysterio. How was this?
It was solid, not spectacular. They didn't do any run-ins for it, which surprised me. Mostly, JD McDonough was dead, so he couldn't run in. This was the most Triple H learned from Vince McMahon here, because the entire fucking match, they called him the demon. And in NXT, they never pressed it that hard. He was just Finn Balor, and the demon was his paint. Like, they never called him the demon over and over again, and it annoyed the shit out of me. But it was a solid, like, a good match. They're continuing the feud, which I, whatever. I don't get why. They should just kind of move on from it and let Balor do other things at this point. And you can always go back to it later if you want to. But it was solid. It was just kind of smushed in there, and they wanted to have the demon as a big character on WrestleMania.
Right. And then we get to United States Championship. Trick Williams finally gets the United States title. Well, finally, hasn't been up for that long. But
yeah,
Trick Williams, mega star. He's a babyface now, defeats Sami Zayn, who flipped heel, right? So, but it's his first main roster title, one with a trick shot. He's going to be a big star for those guys.
He is so damn over. That entire crowd was chanting for him. He had the CVS receipt as a what do they call that off of his jacket? I called it a tail, but there's like an actual name for it when it's like off of a really long part off of a dress or off of a jacket. It was like the length of the ramp though. And somebody like compared it to the size of a CVS receipt, and it really cracked me up.
That's funny.
Yeah. It was a solid match. Sami Zayn's a really good worker. Trick Williams is solid. He's like a slightly better version in ring than The Miz. I think he has a higher ceiling in ring than The Miz. He's just got to work against people who are better than him to get there.
He does. I think he'll get there. I watched his run in TNA, and I thought he was a really good TNA champion.
Yeah.
The Slammiversary match sucked, but that wasn't his fault. But his match one-on-one with Mike Santana I thought was really good.
Yeah, he can level himself up to guys like his matches with Ilya Dragunov were really good, and everybody's like, well, yeah, it's Ilya Dragunov, it should be, but he's their
best wrestler.
Yeah, but like you've got, and that was still early in Trick's development. Like when his first match against Ilya Dragunov, Trick was not a good wrestler at all. By their third match, I thought, okay, this is a guy who can go, like, he clearly had something there. If you put, like, he can rise to the occasion against guys who are better than him, and that is important for a guy of his caliber, because we have seen people who cannot do that, and those guys fail. I thought he was solid. He's going to be a very over champion. He's not doing the open challenges anymore, which he shouldn't, because he's not Ilya Dragunov or Carmelo Hayes who can have a good match with anybody.
No, yeah. He needs to do a different gimmick. It's a new reign. So,
yeah.
Good for him. Women's Championship, Rhea Ripley defeats Jade Cargill. Did Jade do the One-Winged Angel?
She did.
That's like a big deal now.
She did it for the first time, and Rhea kicked out of it. People were very upset online.
everybody AEW fans are mad at the no selling, huh?
yeah, everybody except for, who would have thunk, Kenny Omega thought right. It was pretty cool.
He's a really good person, so of course he doesn't care.
And you know, Kenny was a guy who was important. Like, he helped her out a lot in AEW. I'm sure, like, she just wanted to break out a new big move and a big WrestleMania singles match for her. Got a good pop. Like, it was a solid match too. Like, Rhea's obviously really fucking fantastic. Right. The finish of this match, the last like three moves, is the best finish that you'll ever see in a Jade Cargill match. Just watch that. Like,
okay, I'll see if I can find it on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then we get to the main event, and probably like a top 10 WrestleMania main event, I would say.
Dave Meltzer called it maybe the greatest WrestleMania main event of all time.
I could see that argument.
I tried to think in recent history, like,
because a lot of the greatest WrestleMania matches weren't the main event,
right?
Like those Undertaker Shawn matches, Undertaker Triple H, and Undertaker Punk. Those were not main events. Those were on WrestleMania. Ricky Steamboat Randy Savage was a mid card match.
Right. Austin and Bret
mid card. Bret and Owen. Yeah,
Owen.
That was the first match. That was the first match of the night. So Shawn and Razor. That was a mid card match. So
yeah,
I think if you go back, you're trying to figure out what, like, the best main events ever. I would say that's probably, like, right in there. It was like the WrestleMania 20 with, you know, Shawn and Benoit and Triple H was excellent. Yeah. I think this is just as good as that one. I'd have to go back and watch that one, although it's kind of weird to watch Benoit matches.
I've watched several Benoit matches over the last couple of years, and it is weird, but they're still great. I hate admitting that they're great, but they are still great. I was just more thinking of recent history, because a lot of the recent history is Roman. The Roman Edge Daniel Bryan match was really good.
Yes, that was. Yep.
The Roman and Cody matches were both very good, but they had a lot of the chicanery, a lot of the fuckery that really, you know, in the WrestleMania 40 match, it made sense. Like, it had, that all had to happen there. But it does kind of take away from it.
I liked the second Roman Cody match. I thought that was really good. Because that was like
it was Avengers Endgame. It was the close off of a very long story where everything came together at the right time.
Right.
And that, the crowd went fucking nuts for the finish. Like,
so it was one of the best, like, endings to WrestleMania I think I've ever seen. So with this one, this was just like two old warriors having a fight. And like, they're both bleeding. Actually, I don't think Roman was bleeding. No, Punk was.
I don't think Roman bled, but Punk definitely, he pokey pokeyed himself.
So they're bleeding, they're exhausted, they're using each other's finishers, they're kicking out of each other's finishers. I just thought it was just a really, really good fucking, like, pro wrestling match.
There are a few details in the match that I absolutely loved. First, when Roman was in the corner and he did his taunt, and Punk mid-taunt ran and kneed him in the face.
Cool.
Roman's been doing that taunt forever, and not a single person has attacked him while he is loudly yelling what he is about to do, not a single person has thought, fuck, he's getting ready to spear me, I'm going to go run and knee him in the face. Punk did. Later in the match, when they were on the outside, Roman threw Punk back in, and he looked at him to make sure Punk wasn't staring at him so he could do his taunt on the outside where Punk could not get to him. I thought that was a really cool detail. Like, it made sense to me. I really liked Punk taking off the tape of his hand and throwing it at Roman to make the ref pick it up so he could leg low him. A fantastic near fall. I thought that was great. Like, that's a really good small detail.
I bit on the near fall because I was like, oh shit, of course he's gonna win with a cheap, like, finish. Maybe because they do that so often, maybe that's why I bit on it. But I thought that was a cool moment. I really liked Punk's entrance. I thought Punk, yeah. I don't know that Punk's ever looked better, to be honest with you. I'm not saying it's his best match that he's ever had, because I think there's been some matches where he's done more. But yeah, if you just take the entrance all the way to the finish of the match, he looked like a megastar.
Yes.
Like the guy's in the best shape of his life. He went to Turkey. He got some hair. He's got the good tan. He yep. just, the guy looks incredible. And he looks like a top tier main event level professional wrestling heavyweight. Like yeah. just everything about him. And then of course, Roman is Roman. He's yeah. fantastic.
He's a star.
Yeah. And I just thought everything they did in the match made sense. It was, mm-hmm. all worked. I had no complaints. There wasn't a bunch of gaga and the bullshit. You had the one low blow that was led to actually like a really good near fall that didn't yeah. lead to the finish. I just,
Roman using the steps.
Yeah.
Was kind of, so like they each had their own, like, you know, pushing the limits with the ref.
Yeah.
I liked teasing Punk jumping off the corner into the commentary table and then going back to it later. That's basic, like, wrestling storytelling, wrestling setup is teasing something and then going back to it later in the match. Yeah. I was unsure if Punk could make the jump. The way they shoot it, it does look like when you're behind commentary, it looks further than it is probably. But I was like, man, you're 47 and you're exhausted at this point. Like, I wasn't sure if he could make it. And then he fucking jumps far enough to put his hip into Roman's stomach. So
yeah, and he reminds everybody that he's still CM Punk and he can, yeah. he can still go. And he's not the most athletic guy, but he is still really good. Yeah. One spot that I liked was he's exhausted, right?
Yeah.
And I think he was legitimately exhausted. He was selling some, but like, I think the guy was blown up at this point late in the match. He hits the go to sleep and then he kind of goes down to his knees. He hits the go to sleep. Roman bounces off the ropes and lands on his back. And then he goes yep. to give him a second go to sleep, but he's exhausted. And then he just collapses. I thought that was a good spot. It reminded me of Omega Okada, a spot that they did years ago.
So that is, he did the spot with Moxley in AEW, but mm-hmm. he was able to hit the second go to sleep.
Yeah.
He did the spot with Rollins on Netflix, but he was able to hit the second go to sleep. But here, he just didn't have enough. Like, it was really cool that he's such an important part of the story of the Shield. And finally getting to work all three of those guys one-on-one over the last couple of years. And ultimately having it close out with Roman where he just had nothing left.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought it was a great match. Brilliant match. I thought both guys were great. Do you think Dave gives it a 5, boy? Like, you think it's getting 5?
4¾ is my guess.
Well, they're not women. So yeah. If the women did that, it would be 4¾.
I could see it going 5 because it didn't have any of the fuckery. Yeah. And I think rising above versus what everything else had done on the weekend and getting the crowd, I could see it going 5. But I have seen other times where he said, oh, that's one of the greatest WWE matches in X amount, and then it's 4½ and 4¾.
Yeah.
And I do think he almost does it just to get the online discussion. So it would just be funny to me if he did. But there's never been a WrestleMania main event that has gotten the 5. I don't believe.
No. No. Yeah. No. Because Cody and Seth was not the main event. Neither that Cody was, Roman matches.
Well, the Cody and Seth that got 5 wasn't at WrestleMania.
That was a hell of a sell. I'm talking about the original Cody and Seth when Cody made his debut. They didn't get 5, right?
They got 4½.
4½, okay. Yeah. And then they got the 5 the next month whenever he tore his pec.
Two months later. That was the last Vince McMahon pay-per-view.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I mean, night 2, complete success. I think they had like what, 56,000? Probably pretty accurate.
Yeah. So
WrestleTix, counting fetuses.
Yeah, counting fetuses, very important. Which, you know, if WWE ever gets low on attendance, they can just start counting fetuses and sperm in the arena to inflate their numbers.
Oh yeah.
WrestleTix, I think, had it at 52,000, but this is true for WWE and AEW. WrestleTix cannot account for suites. like right. they have said that. So 56,000, I believe that they're right around there with suite tickets.
Yeah, pretty close to accurate. And plus, like the stadium, like there's some tickets that they never released to Netflix that they just have holds on.
Yeah.
So those could, and those are not just suites; those are other play. Like I've been told that by people that have promoted wrestling events, they're like, Ticketmaster doesn't get all the tickets. Like yeah. there's some that they hold back that they distribute out on their own. So
yeah, well, like I think the on location, a lot of the on location tickets never get released to Ticketmaster because, like, I don't think like the green shirt guy gets the exact same seat every time. I don't think it's an accident. George Kittle no. always being right behind commentary, I don't think yeah. is an accident.
Yeah.
So yeah,
for sure. All right, we only got a few minutes left. Andreas Hale. He is the like the wrestling reporter and the MMA reporter for ESPN. He's been around a long time. He used to write for the Sporting News. Mm-hmm. I think he wrote a book with Big E. Like they co-wrote like a children's book together. Okay. Just a legit reporter. He doesn't really do inside scoops. He more just kind of commentary talking about the events. Been critical of WWE in the past, gave them a C-, and then on one of the events. And then most recently, I think, which is what got him into hot water, wrote an article talking about the latest updates in the Janelle Grant case, which I think is appropriate to do.
Yeah.
If any football team was going through that, you don't think that the beat writer for that football team would be writing that? And would that team pull his access? I don't think so. So for them to pull his access.
Depends on which team. I can see certain owners doing that.
I don't think ESPN would play ball though if it were a football team, but because it's yeah. wrestling, they don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he got his credentials denied essentially, which is Bush League, I think. So ESPN didn't even have they had some of their on-air talent there, but they didn't have any like journalistic representation there.
Yeah.
Which is weird. People started pulling up old tweets where he was basically borderline harassing R-Truth.
Yeah.
So the way R-Truth gets used by the white man. I don't want to say the words because, you know, not going there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to get my ass kicked. Right.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Not interested in that. So I don't think that his tweets at R-Truth years ago played into this. I think it was all because of that Janelle Grant article for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I had seen that R-Truth was not sad about him getting like not being there.
No,
but I don't think that had anything to do with it.
No. So I guess my thing is that ESPN, when it comes to this wrestling stuff, they're not even pretending anymore. Like they just see this as bullshit, just a way to make money, and they don't really care about, you know, the journalism side of it. They're not even trying, which I wish they would just say that. They're going to be journalists when it comes to like real sports, when it comes to football and all those things. But when it comes to pro wrestling, they just don't care. Like it's silly.
Yeah. I think they would do the exact same thing with football, baseball, and basketball if they could get away with it.
Yeah.
But those are much, much bigger in scale. So it's harder to hide that from the public.
Yeah. And some people were saying it was like, well, AEW blocked Alfred Konoha and banned him for life. That guy, Alfred, is not really a journalist or a reporter. He's a troll who harasses Tony Khan on a daily basis. Like he doesn't really provide anything. Like he's not doing journalism. He has no ethics, no standards. That's not Andreas Hale. Andreas Hale is a serious guy. He's like a legit like reporter for the top website in the field, ESPN. Well, so for him to get blocked, that's a big deal. Now if Mike Gilbert gets denied access to WWE, it's like, oh, that makes sense of a fucking nobody.
Right,
but Andreas Hale, that's a big deal.
It was pre-TKO, but UFC had a ban on Ariel Helwani for a long time.
Yeah, it didn't last that long, but he got thrown out of an event because he spoiled the Brock return at UFC 200, and then he went crying on his on the MMA hour.
Yeah,
and they let him come back, but he didn't have the same level of access that he had before. But the two people got banned completely for life was Josh Gross, and who was the other lady's name? gosh, she used to write for Sure Dog. I cannot for the life of me remember her name, but she was a really good reporter.
Yeah.
And Dana White started calling her all kinds of gay slurs and like banned her for life. But that was before the TKO purchase. So this is just like thin-skinned bullshit from WWE's side.
Yeah. And the funny thing is they created this own problem for themselves because like Vince, as stupid as he was, he never had these big reporters and questionnaires at the events. He would do the occasional, like the quarterly investor calls, and then you'd have reporters who would answer, like the conference calls over the phone. And then I believe I seen one time, maybe around the XFL relaunch, where Dave had put out like, I was told ahead of time I'm not allowed to ask any questions, but I'll be able. But he said, but I'll be allowed to ask whatever I want after the call, like not to where everybody else could hear it. But like, you know, so Vince did things like that. And then all of a sudden they decide, oh, we want to do all this in person. And that was their trying to make Triple H their the new Dana White, but on WWE, like they wanted his face in front of reporters. And Triple H just doesn't have that personality to deal with media.
No, I
think he just wants to be behind scenes doing creative and never talking to anybody at this point in his life.
He can't handle difficult questions. He's not mature enough to handle it.
He's never been put in that situation before. He doesn't have that kind of training.
Yeah.
Like Dana White's entire career was to handle that. Triple H's was not. And I think this was the first time where they realized, like, hey, maybe we don't need to do this. So they didn't have Triple H out there at all. But they created this their own monster that it didn't need to, like there was no value in it to doing that, and now they're starting to receive blowback from how they're handling it.
Yeah, the whole thing sucked. You know, I tweeted out that all the credential. I knew this was never going to happen. By the way,
yeah.
I'm just saying it, just to say it. But they should have banded together and boycotted because like if. Back in the day, when Trump was about to throw out a CNN reporter, like Fox News stood up for that CNN reporter and said, you can't do that. Like they threatened a boycott, right? If it happened with a baseball team or if it happened with a, you know, a football team and like that reporter was legit, right? If it's a scumbag, okay, scumbag, okay, get rid of him. That's fine. But if it's a legit reporter and they're just asking tough questions, the other reporters would then band together and stick up for that person.
Yeah.
You saw some tweets, right? Like that, and that was really the extent of it. Nobody really worked hard to get Andreas back in there. I would have liked to seen some of the media members kind of band together to, you know, stand up to these guys and bring this guy in, but nobody really has that kind of spine or backbone. Like Sean and Dave tweeted out about it and stood up for him, but that was really the extent of it. And like Sean and Dave were not going to that event. So like they didn't care. Like Sean was at a swimming pool.
Yeah.
Which probably the best way to watch WrestleMania, if you ask me.
Yeah. I think it is a media issue as a whole that more big names are willing to go to the podcaster compared to the real journalist.
Yeah.
And the real journalist still wants to get their scoop. And they're afraid to lose it, so they're not willing to stand up anymore. Whereas before, the market wasn't flooded with fake journalists. It was all real, legitimate people who went to school for this and had integrity and learned about ethics. And that's not the market's just flooded with people who are fake journalists now. And the real journalists have to have, unfortunately, less of a spine if they want to continue in their line of work.
Yeah,
and that's a media issue as a whole.
Yeah, it's happening everywhere. And as a guy that's a fake journalist, like I get it, but this is also not my job, so I don't really care if I have access. So
yeah,
it's not. I'm not getting hurt financially because I don't go to these things. Like I have a real job,
so. And I think other people who they are doing this as their real job, they're afraid to lose any potential income that could be there.
Yeah.
It sucks because I wish it wasn't that way for everything because we're seeing it affect bigger issues as a whole when people are not willing to stand up for it. But I do understand. It just sucks.
Yeah. All right. Last thing, and then we're going to get out of here. Steve Patrick says, do you have TNA ratings? This Fed talk is putting me to sleep. Look, this is the most Fed talk I've ever done on a podcast in forever. But I don't know if you want those TNA ratings. They weren't good. But I do have them. They're out. I put out a tweet. Hold on, let me pull it up. I don't think I'm going to do like a separate video. It depends on if I get a chance to do a brace front back extra. But I think they need, like, there needs to be like a real TNA story, because these ratings are not that.
Yeah.
There's no story here. So TNA Thursday Night Impact on AMC from April 16, averaged 212,000 viewers. So that would be down from 257. They're going up against Collision, but the demo rating went up from last week's 0.04 to 0.05 in the demo. The big news is they went down from number one overall in teens on cable down to 31st. So big drop there. Collision did 473,000 with a 0.08 in the demo. So they obviously had a major effect on Impact's ratings for this week. So,
yeah.
And if people wonder why TNA is no longer allowing their wrestlers to wrestle AEW wrestlers and make them look good, this is why. this is the reason. Like, there's other reasons that add to that, but this is like the main crux of it. They don't want to deal with that. So, but yeah, the ratings, there was a really big story. Like, they're down in like older casual viewers, but the demo was up, so that, like, no big deal. So but Joe, I think that's gonna do it for us, man. I really appreciate you coming in a pinch. Glad that you were able to watch both nights and endure the Fed for us.
Yes.
I'll be back on Thursday night after Impact. Oh, I'm working with Eric Young right now. I keep checking my phone because I'm going to interview Eric Young at some point. I just don't know when. They just want to know how, like, they asked me, like, hey, how long do you want Eric for? And I'm like, oh, I can talk to Eric all day.
Yeah. There's so much you can talk with that guy
about. I've been watching Eric Young for over 20 years. I got 1,000 questions for him. So I said,
Question one, when is the cleanse coming?
Yes. Is it going to be out before Dr. Dre's Detox album? Like, yes. What's going to happen first?
What happens first, the new Guns N' Roses album or the cleanse?
Yeah. What happens first, the Epstein files and the UFO files get released or the cleanse?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Those are good questions for Eric, but I'm excited to be able to talk to him. So
yeah,
that's working that out fantastic. Working that out right now with his producer. So hopefully I'll have that soon. But all right, guys, that's going to do it for us this time. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.